Hello, everybody. Welcome to episode 59 of the Funkhauser Situation. My name is Chris Tomlin. I am the editor of the pop culture wing of KSR Funkhauser. And this is our podcast where we dissect pop culture, the ins and outs, what we like, what we don't like. And with me, as always, is my friend Lee Cruz. Lee, where you been?
I've been, you know, on the couch.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
So we need to talk about this up front, right? So we haven't done an episode in some time.
What, a couple of weeks, I think. A
couple of weeks. We were supposed to do the live episode, yeah, which we didn't do, and we will reschedule. We thank those of you who are going to come out to our live podcast at Jake's. And I
love
promise,
that place.
Yeah, I know. And I hope that we can do that again soon.
Yeah.
But we were a little sidetracked for a while.
Yeah.
Which we need to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
And Lee, I'm going to let you sort of lead off by sort of talking about the situation that happened at WLEX.
Okay.
You host a television show called Live with Lee and Haley.
Yes.
And you had an episode where you made a joke and it kind of took on a life of its own and resulted in your being dismissed from WLEX.
Well, I technically wasn't making a joke. I was making a comment. So, if I can give context to the whole thing so you can have the framework, if you don't mind. The show started July 2017. This is not first there was dirt, by the way. I'm just giving you context into that day.
Right.
So July 2017, and since day one, we have had a running argument about the royal family.
Yes, and if you watch the show, you know that the royals have been a long. Haley adores the royal family.
She loves
everything.
She loves the pomp, the circumstance. I think it's ridiculous. I don't know why it merits news coverage in the American news cycle. I don't get it, but she loves it, and she loves to tease me about it and aggravates me about it. And I looked it up because I've got nothing to do. We've had over 100 arguments on air over the validity of why is this a news story. 100 times on the air of me rolling my eyes and going, this is stupid.
Right, because they always, she and her friend Claire,
they
watched the wedding and they were excited about the baby.
They put on tiaras to watch the wedding. They do all of that.
Right.
So that's sort of the background.
And the royal family situation is quantifiably, like the whole fact that they from a government standpoint, are nothing but sort of figureheads.
Yeah. I have nothing against the people. They seem nice. I just like to tease her. But I think it's ridiculous we spend so much time talking about it.
But in the Western Hemisphere, that is as close as you get to a fairy tale situation.
I know why they like it. Yes, I understand the principle behind it. As a matter of fact, we talked about it so much it became a franchise to where it was a set-alone piece.
Mm-hmm.
So it was actually it was scheduled to be sponsored. So and we even built a billboard. So there's an opening when we begin our fight about the royal family. They play this thing where I'm dressed as a Joker and Haley is a queen, and and then we have our fight.
Right.
So on May 9th, we went to a shoot where we had to get some extra B-roll. We get back late. And this happens 3 or 4 times a year where we don't really have a chance to prep for the show. So I literally have to rush back, put on my earpiece, and go sit in the chair and go. I don't choose the hot topic. Sometimes I'll send notes to our producer Catherine and say, "Hey, I like this subject. I like this topic," and we'll discuss. That day, I didn't know what we were doing, but we ping pong stories. So if I read the first one, Haley reads the next one, and that's the way we operate. So we begin the show about it's the 5th or 8th story into it. We do a royal wedding. Segment sketch,
right?
So we start the argument about that, and
as we've done a million times,
right. So we're into this blah 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 blah. We're going at it, and now we're done, and we've got one more story to read, and it's my turn to read. So prompter starts rolling up.
Mm-hmm.
BBC disc jockey fired for pulling prank on royal family. Now, in my head, you know, hey, this sounds funny. What did this guy do?
Somebody's given these rubes a comeuppance.
But yeah. but the context I have to understand from my standpoint. I didn't read Arkansas country music disc jockey fired for making fun of royal family. I read BBC disc jockey fired for making fun of royal family, and then I read using the chimpanzee in the depiction of the royal baby. Right away, I'm thinking Monty Python. I'm thinking fish. Monkeys, absurdist humor, all of that stuff. That's my mind frame. And I laugh. I say, oh, here's my new favorite DJ. I say that because I'm thinking he is aligned with me and this is silly.
That this is just an absurdist joke.
That's an absurdist joke. That's
mocking
that's my,
more the image right, of we're expecting right. this to be, yeah. you know.
I'm seeing this for the first time and that's my first thought. Mm-hmm. That's my original first thought. I don't know anything else other than that. Haley follows tabloids. She knows that there's a more darker tone to this, that it's
she knew that.
Yeah, she okay. knew because right. she follows this stuff. So she goes, well, that's racist. And she, or I may have read the word, it's racist. And I went, what? And so now I'm confused as why is this racist? Because I don't see the image. And that's the other thing I'll get to in just a second because we don't have access. But I'm like, why is what? And I'm like, well, we don't know if it's racist, meaning I'm saying. God, I hope this isn't racist. I just called this guy my favorite DJ. I don't know what that is.
And this occurs to you in your head.
In my head. This is all happening within
live.
4 or 5 seconds.
Right.
All of this
yeah.
is happening.
There's
again,
no go back. There's no hold on. I misspoke. Let's go back and do
if
this
If we could have
again.
Popped the image up, I could have retracted immediately and said, oh, wait a minute. Okay. That is, you know. But we don't have that image. I don't know what he's done. And again, I'm in combat mode trying to score points against Haley. Hey, even a guy in England thinks the royal family's silly. So she, again, starts yelling at me. No, that's racist. That's racist. And if you watch the video, you'll see me with my coffee mug. And I'm kind of leaned back in my chair. And to the uninitiated, I think I look smug and smirkish. But the truth is, I'm going, why do you keep saying this word?
Why? You're trying to signal to her.
Yeah, I'm looking
where
at her,
is this coming
and
from?
I'm grinning, but I'm like, my wheels are spinning. Like, why does she keep saying the word racist? What is happening right now? And then I make a joke about her just to get out of it. I turn it on her. I make it about her, and we're done. So we were so busy that day. Like we go to the next segment. Then we got stuff to shoot after. So I don't have time to decompress, or even think about anything I've done until that night. And I do think about it, like, what did that guy do? And I go Google it. Since we didn't have access, CNN provides the images. Cause I did ask Catherine.
Had you started to see storm clouds on the horizon at
no.
this point, or was
no.
this just in your own head? Like, what was that all about?
Yeah.
That's weird.
No, that's why. Cause I had time. I just got home and, you know, mm-hmm. and I'm thinking, oh yeah, what was that thinking? What did that guy do? So then I look it up and I go, holy cow. Yeah. Okay, she's right. That is racist. This is what he's done. So I made up my mind the next day. I'm going to apologize to my audience and go, hey, yesterday I was spouting off not knowing what this guy had actually done. And I had talked with our mutual friend, Sean. And Sean said, you know what you should do is show the photo. And I go, you're right. Because that way I can explain to people why I need to apologize. Otherwise, people are going to be confused.
Right.
So we show the photo the next day. We get access to it, and I can show it.
Did you show it on the first day?
No.
You didn't show it at
all? I never saw it.
It wasn't even aired on the,
correct.
On the show?
Correct.
Okay.
Nobody saw the photo. I mean, Haley might have through some other means. I didn't. Our producer didn't. She just pulled the story from the wire and said this guy was fired for making fun of the royal family. I don't think our producer knew it was... I mean, I don't know. I can't speak for her, but I just know that, you know, I'm caught off guard with this whole thing. So I said specifically to the audience, I said, I'm going to show you this. And I said, look at it. And again, it's that old photo with an elderly white couple holding hands with a chimpanzee dressed up. The real offending part is what the DJ did, which he said, royal baby comes home from hospital. Racist. That's racist.
Yes.
And I said so. And I went on the show. I go, this is why I'm apologizing, because I have accidentally aligned myself with this clown over in England. And I want you to know I am sorry. This isn't me. That's not what I believe. I don't think that's funny at all. Because I was laughing, you know, when we started this segment. because I'm thinking, oh, here's a guy that got canned for being anti-royal.
Mm-hmm. You know? Which, on the surface, that also makes sense, that a disc jockey would be canned for being anti-royal.
Well, sure. I thought the Queen right? got uptight.
Right.
You know, there was disc jockeys that somehow got Prince, or somehow got the number to Windsor Castle and told to the Queen and said they were Prince Philip's doctor.
Yes,
all this stuff
story.
Is in my head.
Yeah. There are DJs who are continuing, like Russell Brand has done that. Jonathan Ross has done that. These are all people who've played phone pranks and things like that. There is that culture over there of let's mock the royal family, and it's a big deal for them because there are a lot of people over there who still very hold it in high regard. But that's not that's what you were thinking that this was.
Of course, that's what I was thinking it was. Race never entered my mind, not in the least. And again, that's why I was caught off guard when Haley brought it to my attention by screaming at me. Mm-hmm. And here's the thing, and I've seen so much on social media. I wanted to apologize because it hurt me that I did that, because I left that. Because if you take it out of context, which I gave it, and you just watch the clip, which is the way it's edited now, it looks like I'm having a good time laughing at a racist joke. Mm-hmm. And I've never had a good time laughing at a racist joke because I don't find them funny in the least. And I knew what damage that was, not just to me, but to people that I care about and people that had trusted me to be inclusive and make sure that everybody that watches our show has a good time. And that's what I was so upset by myself, but by not being informed about that one particular story,
Yeah, I remember you even saying something to me on the day of.
Yeah.
You said, I think.
What was the next day?
The next day, you and I,
because I did Hey Kentucky. I think
right,
me,
we
you,
were
and
just
Matt.
Chatting.
Yeah, and I said, hey, yesterday I screwed up.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was telling you guys.
Yeah, you told us that. You said, I can't believe this happened. I mean, I remember that conversation that we had. And it led to your dismissal.
Well, first, I they asked me, they didn't ask me to do anything. Actually, I asked to do the statement and apologize, but I told Pat. So first I went through a series of phone calls that I made to people who reached out to the station. One, I wanted to explain myself, but two, to sincerely apologize because I know that, all of a sudden you trust this person.
Right.
To be normal.
You've been on television for 20...
I've been in front of an open microphone technically for 30 years.
Yeah, you've been on TV every day for 20-something years. You've been doing open mics once a week for...
And that's the other side of this to where, it seems odd that you think a guy for 30 years in front of an open microphone all of a sudden isn't just going to jump out and be a blatant racist. Right. That's an odd call for a guy, to do that. But, yeah, I reached out to people, and then they decided we're going to suspend him. And then they decided they're going to fire him. Next week I'm going back, and they're going to shoot me. So we're going to continue the parade.
What's gone through your mind since the dismissal, because people can see your apologies online, but what has been going through your mind in these days that you've, been dismissed from your post? What do you think about during, does it still replay in your head? Is this something that still, that you still play over and over again? Is it like, God, I just wish I would have been prepared enough?
Here's the thing. You can do that and beat yourself up. For that to even happen took so many tumblers to fall into place. We had to get back late, right? Mm-hmm. Because I always look at those scripts, if not for anything, to prepare a joke about it. So I would have known, I would have seen exactly what the guy had done all the way through it before I started commenting, and I would have kept my mouth shut and just read it and said what I really believe, which is, hey, this guy sounds like he's racist. I may not like the Royals, but I'm not going to do anything racist again. You know, that's right. That's crazy. Two, if it was Haley's read instead of my read, all these things happened. And you have to, if you're a person of faith, you have to think, well, things happen for a reason. Yeah, I should have been prepared. I made a broadcasting error. I'm certainly not a racist, but I had this accident, this gaffe, that gave a perception of me that isn't true, and now I got to live with it. But that's the challenge for me now.
Right.
And it's not fun, but, you know, I think all I can do is think the good Lord has got something else planned for me.
You know, I think, too, I mean, when you look back at that, I mean, like, you can't also, I mean, you can also, you have to also give credence to what was said. You know, I mean, like, you know, in that context, what was said did look like the worst of you coming. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, but it wasn't me at all.
Right.
It was a misinformed me.
Right.
Commenting on something that actually wasn't happening.
Right.
In my head, as I'm reading, I'm thinking this guy had done something normal. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was again, it was a huge broadcasting error. Actually, you know, if I was the company, I would have agreed. I thought they, yeah. If you go out there on the tightrope, and I'm a professional broadcaster.
It's live television.
If I make an egregious mistake like that, you should probably suspend me. Firing, I don't know, because then you look at the body of work and you go, we're going to blow him out for a mistake. The guy's been with us 21 years.
Right.
He's never said or done anything like this ever. We know that's not who he is. We take him at his word. It seems a little overkill to me. You fire a person because then you set a precedent that terrifies every employee you got.
Right. That's a good point. You know, I think too that if people saw this and did not and were not familiar with your body of work. We're not familiar with your specific personality.
Right. Yeah.
Obviously,
it
looks a certain way.
Yeah.
And I think that it also comes down to situation where, you know, you're a comedian.
Mm-hmm.
You make jokes.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that it's a comedian's job, too, to look at all the angles, which you were unable to do
mm-hmm.
before you made that joke.
Mm-hmm.
And I can certainly see, and I know you can too, why that would be a problem for an African American community seeing that out of context for the first time. Because it is, you know, that joke that BBC disc jockey made was so horrendously, you know, out of line.
Mm-hmm.
It was just terrible. You have to, I think, understand, too, why the African-American community would be upset at seeing that. Just that clip, right?
I mean, why do you think I apologize
well,
right
of course,
away?
Yeah, right.
Because I knew what it had done. If you, again, if you, and that's what I was, the greatest anxiety I had is people are going to look at this out of context. And they're going to see the worst of humanity. A guy thinks this is funny, which I do not. And
right.
I did not. Even at the time, I did not.
Right.
I was thinking it was something else. I know that. But I will say this, too. You know, I had to deal with, for a couple of weeks, this a lot of hate and negativity. You know, got my first death threat. That's fun. But I got a thimble full of hate. Followed by a tanker truck full of love.
Mm-hmm.
And the most zealous in that group of people that supported me was people of color that have come to me, have written to me, have hugged me, run to me out, and caught me in my car. And told me, Lee, you're good.
Mm-hmm.
We know you. This, you know, and I've had time to try to think and, you know, wrap my head around that. And I think a lot of it is, in my opinion, is that they have dealt with real racism in their life. And they recognize that their antenna is much more attuned to it.
Oh, yeah. 100%,
than you
yeah.
and I would be.
Mm-hmm.
And they know that I'm not. And so they They want me to know that. That I, they know that was not.
Yeah.
You know, I've just made a dumb mistake. Yeah, you're an idiot, but you know, you're not evil. You're not a racist.
Right. I think what you just said is very poignant. That there's a certain antenna that's higher tuned to that, and I think that, you know, as white males, you know, we sometimes can get complacent to the fact that there are communities that are under fire a lot and that have to deal with that thing as a part of their real life every day, you know, and that when you hear something like that, it is such a it's such a hurtful thing, especially, you know, the joke that BBC disc jockey made. And I think that, you know, in comedy, it's tricky. It's a tightrope because you have to, you know, we've talked on this show about how good comics push the envelope. You know, that we've talked about that many times. And I think that there's an aspect to this that, you know, I think that sometimes people of our race and gender even can sometimes forget. Oh, I don't want to say forget, but I mean I maybe become a little bit lazy to the fact that there are people out there who could be more hypersensitive to certain conventions, certain jokes, certain attitudes. And so I think that what happened with you is that you inadvertently stepped in one of those puddles.
Right.
And it looked very, you know.
Right.
Yeah, you know, it looked very bad. So I know that at LEX, I mean, it the day after your dismissal was just it was like a morgue over there. You know, I mean, you were a cornerstone of that station. And people were upset. They were hurt, and I think that comes from the fact that they know you. And they know no one in that building was out to get you. I mean, like, no one was out. No, because I think they have the benefit of knowing who you are, knowing your heart, knowing, you know, the type of person that you are. You know, I just I know that it's an unfortunate situation that happened to you. You know, it's a slippery slope, you know.
What do you mean slippery slope?
Well, I mean, like, you know, I think that you yourself said, I mean, what would you have done if you were management? You would definitely have suspended you for that.
I think I would have, yeah. It's, you know, I mean, I don't know. Lee looked like an idiot.
Yeah.
Just for that reason alone. You didn't know what you were talking about.
Yeah.
And so you hurt people with that, which killed me. It literally killed me.
Oh, I know. We talked, and I mean, could hear it in your voice. I mean, I knew.
It wasn't about me. I wasn't apologizing to save my job. And all. You know, it was just, I got to make this right. This is not who I am. I don't want to hurt anybody, ever. It's made me so much more aware, too, of people in the news cycle, how quick we are to judge, you know.
Mm-hmm.
We think we know the story, and I'm not so sure we do, you know. You know, being on this side of it, it's like, because, man, you see a lot of misinformation out there. Right. You know, when you're a part of 1,000 conversations, it's the oddest, most surreal thing I've ever been through in my life, where, you know, literally thousands and thousands of people are arguing over you.
Right.
And none of them have a clue as to what they're talking about.
Right.
You know, and you're getting haters from both sides, you know. You're getting the language control people that are zero tolerance, which is, geez. That's a whole philosophy that I don't necessarily agree with. Or then you get legitimate racists who want to use this as some weapon, you know. All of that. I was seeing all of this going
that's,
on.
And that's another problem, is that there are legitimate hardcore racists out there. And you don't want to be thrown into that pool. You know, yeah. You don't want to be seen as one of those horrific people. You know, but I think you and I are the same, and like I'm the type of person that even if I think I might have accidentally misspoke to somebody, like I remember recently one time I asked somebody about a parent, and their parent had passed away, mm-hmm. and I'd forgotten about that, and I didn't correct it at the time.
Yeah,
I thought about it later, and because in the moment it was like, well, my mom passed away, and I was like, oh right, I'm thinking in my head, I should have known that. You know, yeah. Like, why did I say that? What an right. idiot. Yeah. And that was a one-on-one conversation that I could go back and say, hey, listen, you know, I'm so sorry. You know, mm-hmm. you what you did affected a whole community of people. So yeah. it's difficult for you to go one-on-one, and you tried.
Anybody that called people. Absolutely. Dozens and dozens of phone calls, people that would call in. But, you know, there are some people, though, you know, thank God there are normal folks out there that still outnumber crazy people. I remember seeing on social media, you know, because I sincerely wanted to reach out and make sure that, one, not that I just explain myself, but try to heal. And then I saw some lady that was upset that I was doing that. That I, it was, she compared it, it was equitable to a predator allowed to contact the victim. Mm. You know, and I thought, well, that's an odd way of looking at this.
Yeah.
So it was, well, it's a thing, was on it's a both thing that, sides, there is enough lunacy out there to
yeah.
to cause the rest of us trouble. But really, I mean, listen, I don't know what's going to happen with me, but I do know that I couldn't be more humble by the outpouring of support and love that I've gotten.
And you have.
And yeah. I God bless these people and the stories that they've told me, that what it meant to them as they were either going through chemo or you know, my wife was she passed in the last 4 months of her life at 12:30. She could decompress and just laugh at you and Haley. Mm-hmm. And I got dozens of those stories, and it meant everything to me that they would share that, and that, you know, we touched them in the way I wanted to. I wanted it to be an inclusive show where people could have sanctuary and just forget about their worries for a while. Mm-hmm.
And there are going to be people who you're not going to win back over.
Yeah, I think there were people, though, who didn't like me to begin with and then used that, too. Used my mistake as a weapon. But I gave it to them. You know, that's on me.
Right.
Because, you know, it was a gaffe and it was an accident, but it was one that in today's society is fatal.
It was, and I think it's fatal because it's very serious. You know, I mean, it's not just saying, you know, it's not, it's something that's so, I think, pinpoint, you know, that I think it was very hard to hear for some people. And like I said, there are going to be some people who are going to have a very hard time letting go of that. But I think that.
But I mean, for a guy who did not intend.
Right.
And was not in any shape or form inferring anything about races. And to hold on to that's a bitter heart. That's that you gotta let that go if you're ever going to attain any kind of happiness. Mm-hmm. I mean, and that's for me too. I gotta let myself, like you asked me about, you know, you think about replay that in your head. Well, I could never get through life if I just keep replaying that in my head. I gotta think there's something that somebody else is doing something for me. A higher power is, because I don't know how this is the dumbest thing ever in my mind, because that's not me, and then I make this mistake, and it looks like it's me, but it isn't, and now I got to live with this thing. I got to put my trust in God to get through the rest of this, because there's no way I can survive if I hang on to it.
Right. And I know you. And I know you not to be the type of person that you appear to be in this moment. And I hope that the people who know you will hang on to that. And I hope that the people who maybe mistrust you now will come around to understanding that is not you as well. And, you know, I'm glad that we were able to talk about this. I know this has been a difficult situation for you and for the people who were upset with you. And, you know, I think that I think that there are you know, better things on the horizon for you. And I hope that I sincerely hope, as your friend and as somebody who loves you, that, you know, you're able to kind of achieve that sort of peace with the people, with your detractors, and find your way forward. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So, well, so regardless, you know, we're glad to be back. with you guys. We yep. haven't been on. We haven't.
So this is the transition you've planned. Is this the segue we're going to see?
I didn't know
here?
How I was going to transition this. This was one of the things I didn't know what I was going to. How I was going to transition, but I'm glad to see you again. I haven't even seen you since all this went down. We've talked on the phone several times, but I haven't seen you, and I'm glad to be back here with you in our space where we can have some fun, and we're glad that you listeners have come back to join us again, and we hope to move forward.
Well, wait
now.
A minute. Do you have anything you need to be forgiven for? Is there a mistake or an issue in your life that I could?
No, I'm pretty good.
Do a therapy session with you. Ask you tough questions about some gaffe you've made.
Nope, I'm pretty gaffe free.
Yeah.
Pretty.
Should I call your wife and ask
goofs,
her if that's true?
No goofs, gaffes, nothing in my. Yeah, my wife might have some ideas of things you could talk to me about, but yeah, no, this is not about me.
You sure you don't want to? Why don't we delve into it?
No, let's keep everything above board. I'd like to move on and get back into what we do best, which is talk about pop culture,
you know,
which is a show we've done for 58 episodes, and this will be no different because the Funkhauser situation will continue. We've had a lot of great, as you've seen on Twitter, we had a lot of great support asking us when we were coming back, and that's all very much appreciated. And so hopefully we can do that. What have you been, seen?
Well, I finished, Catch 22? I finished that last night.
It's good, wasn't it?
It was so well done.
I mean, it really was.
The production values are through the roof on that thing. It kind of reminded me they shot it through this sort of brown, dirty filter.
Yeah.
Or a golden filter that gives it sort of this classic look. And it reminded me of when Oh Brother, Where Art Thou was. But they did theirs chemically. You know, they actually ran film, celluloid, through some chemical process.
Did they really?
To give it that look. This obviously is digital, but.
Yeah.
But it looks so good, and it's so well done. You know, I know George Clooney did most of it, and it's fantastic.
Well, his production partner plays the doctor, Grant Heslop.
Oh yeah,
that's his production partner. If you don't know what Catch 22 is, it's a very famous novel by Joseph Heller. I think it came out maybe '60s.
Yeah, I never read the book, but I did see the movie.
Yeah, Alan Arkin.
Alan Arkin.
Mike Nichols made the movie. Now right. Alan Arkin played Yossarian.
Yeah.
It's funny. I have started rereading the novel again.
Mm-hmm.
I read it in high school, and I remember just thinking it was so funny. And I remember it being the first novel that I thought, I didn't know novels could be funny. At that point, I was in high school, and we were reading Great Expectations, blah, 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 Great Expectations and Shakespeare and things like that. And so I had never seen anybody be laugh out loud funny in print before I read Catch 22. And I remember just loving it.
Yeah.
And now I go back and I read it, and it's crazily, as a writer, I now see how much that book influenced the way I write.
Yeah.
I can see, I can look at that book now and I can read it and I go, oh my God, I stole so many tricks from this book.
Yeah.
That it must have lodged in my head in terms of writing in a funny way.
Yeah.
And I loved seeing I remember watching the movie, and I remember thinking it was okay. I really liked the series, though, because there were characters in the book, Milo Minderbinder, who is a tough character to nail.
Yeah.
He's a character in the book who promotes himself to the head of the mess hall,
because
the head of the mess hall can contract airplanes.
Right.
So he promotes himself in order to start using airplanes for his own purposes. Basically a war profiteer in the middle of the camp.
And but he's easily the favorite character, though.
He's so bright and sunny and likable.
Entrepreneur.
And by the end of the book, he's running food everything. All over the globe.
Yeah,
he's got his own industry basically running out of this Italian air camp. And that's a great kid. That's a great episode that focuses on him. And the guy that played Yossarian was really good.
I thought he was too.
I'd never seen him before.
He reminds me of the guy that played Mindy's boyfriend on the Mindy Project, the doctor.
Adam Pally?
Maybe.
From Happy Endings?
No. No.
Oh, no.
No, not that guy.
You're the guy from the newsroom. Messina, I think is his name.
Maybe.
Chris Messina.
I'm just saying he was Mindy Kaling's boyfriend for the majority of the show.
I don't watch a lot of that show.
He looks just like him. They look just alike.
I'll take your word for that.
Okay. I'm going to look him
up. Noted.
I'm going to look him up so I can show you.
I know who you're talking about. He was on the newsroom. He played Mary Tyler Moore's son.
What?
Yeah, he was on the newsroom. I'm pretty sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
He's that old?
No, the newsroom was on HBO 4 years ago.
Oh, I thought you said Mary Tyler Moore show.
No, he wasn't his son on the Mary Tyler Moore show. He would have been 7 years old.
I don't know if we're talking about the same guy.
I know.
Because when you see this guy, you're going to go.
Let me see him.
You're going to go, oh, yeah.
Good radio. Let's looking at things on our phone.
Maybe it is Chris Messina. Is that what you said?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, you know who it is. Well, he looks just like the Catch-22 kid.
Yeah, he does.
Okay.
I'll accept your apology now.
I'm not apologizing
like
for that.
Are you still watching What We Do in the Shadows?
Yes. I'm behind,
goodness.
So I got three or four left. But, yeah, that's a great show.
It really is. And they've really pulled off something amazing. In that the movie's great. You've seen the movie.
Yeah, love the movie.
And I'm always skeptical of TV shows based on movies.
Yeah.
Because I feel like, how are you going to recapture? Are you going to recast everybody? That's going to be weird because we saw them in the movies and they were this person. Now we got to get to know this person in another way. But they changed the characters. They switched out all the characters to be different personalities, and that's why it works.
Yeah, and the actors are so good. I mean, they
embody
those characters.
Yeah.
They're so different and unique. They really sell it.
Yeah.
It's great.
It's a show we've talked about on here before, about four vampires who share a house together. What city are they in?
Staten Island.
They're Staten Island, that's right, yeah. And they've been sent over there by some head vampire to colonize America.
Right.
And they've done nothing but just hang out in this house.
Yeah.
Because they're a bunch of idiots.
And then the Baron shows up.
The Baron shows up and they have to act like they've turned everybody, you know.
But they've taken all those mythologies about vampires and used them as devices for jokes. It's really good. It's
really well done.
And
you
can't go in any place unless you're invited.
Right.
You know.
Yeah.
All of that stuff.
And they use also all the great facets of mythology in their terms of, like, they're just sexually ravenous creatures and one's an energy vampire who just zaps your energy by talking to you. he's a great character.
Yeah.
He's hardly ever around. Yeah. He just will pop up every now and then.
Yeah, they don't really like that guy.
Right. In the movie, there was the Nosferatu type guy that was in the basement all the time in the coffin, who looked like the pointy eared,
which is the sort of the Baron in the TV version. You know what is so impressive about this show, other than the joke writing, is the production values, because it's meant to look like it's a documentary on the cheap, but when they do their effects, they blend organically so seamlessly. It's really
like
good.
The bat, like when they turn into a bat and turn
all
back
of that.
Into a person.
Or if the guy, you know, eats food
and
then he throws up and it rockets himself around.
Yeah.
I think the Baron did that, ate a piece of
when
pizza.
When they eat human food, they can't handle it.
It's so well done. Yeah.
And they also... what was I gonna say? There's something going on. But there's Jack Pilgrim. Hey, Jack. It's just they do a great job, and they're all different characters. But I think Jermaine Clement and Taika Waititi, who played roles
they're
in the first
executive
movie,
executive producing this thing.
It's funny. I was talking to a friend of mine this week, and he had not seen the movie, but he's been watching the show.
Uh-huh.
And he watched the movie, and he didn't like it as well as the show.
Yeah.
And I think it's whichever one you watch first is your thing, you know. But they have a werewolf, a group of werewolves that are their rivals, which is great.
Love that.
It's a lot of fun, and it's almost probably done with its first season. It's on FX. You can go check it out. I think there are 10 episodes in, so.
Yeah. I think I got three left, maybe.
Yeah. You got some good ones left.
Good.
I'm caught up.
I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah. Lee, it's summertime.
Yes, it is.
The birds are singing.
Mm-hmm.
The sun is hot
okay.
on our necks. Well, is that right? It is. That's true. It's
odd.
Getting there.
That's an odd saying.
It's a poetic saying. Hot on our necks. Is that a thing?
I don't know.
I don't know.
Never heard it before.
I say it all the time. People always
sun's hot on my neck.
Just like that. Yeah. Hot on my face.
Yeah.
Sunburn. Baseball. You see any of these big hot summer movies?
So Godzilla?
Yeah, tell me about that.
You know who I love, though? I mean, this guy is a he's so good. It's a Kyle Chandler guy.
He's in Catch-22.
He's in Catch-22.
And Godzilla, right?
He's in Godzilla. It's just, he's just believable.
He can do anything.
He's just believable. Whatever he's doing, you believe that's really the dude doing it.
My favorite, I can tell you my favorite Kyle Chandler scene ever that he's ever done. I didn't watch Friday Night Lights, so I'm sure that's probably a much better one in that show that everybody loves.
Yeah, I never watched
His scene in Wolf of Wall Street where he visits DiCaprio on the yacht.
Yeah.
You remember that?
Yeah.
And he's trying to kind of like buddy up to him, but also get information. And you can tell they're both reading each other.
Yeah.
It's a masterful scene. A
lot of layers.
Oh, it's great. It's funny and it's interesting. And you know DiCaprio's on to him and you know Chandler's on to DiCaprio.
Yeah.
And it's just this great moment of two characters who don't want to say what they're up to. Yeah. They're both up to something.
Yeah.
He's really good. So are you saying that this movie is, what's wrong with it? It's visually probably great, right?
Yes. I can't find any fault with the effects. It's just not much of a story.
Do we see everything in the commercials? Because I feel like
it's a little long. Listen, I knew what it was going to be, so I go in there to watch monsters fight. You know, that's why you go see this. But you don't need it. Even though it wasn't that long, it felt long. You know, because they kept putting the main characters in different perilous situations. And, you know, after the eighth time, you're like, well, how stupid are you people? You know, you keep putting yourself back in this position. You're underneath of the thing. Get out of there.
I thought the last one was good. I haven't seen this one yet.
It's okay.
Now, the end of the last one, like the coda after the credits was that they were setting up a King Kong Godzilla matchup. Is that alluded to at all in this movie?
They mention Kong. You don't see Kong.
Because that last King Kong movie was real deal good.
You thought so?
Yeah, I liked it.
I didn't think so. I'll tell you what was good.
What?
Aladdin.
Aladdin was great. Yeah. Here's the thing.
What is this, a caveat?
Yeah. It's great, but it's only great because it's exactly the same as
It's not exactly the same.
It's pretty much exactly
the same. It's the same story, but it's done in a different style.
The dialogue's the same.
Not exactly the same.
Pretty close. You know what that movie made me want to do? Go watch Hitch again.
Yeah.
Because it was so refreshing to see Will Smith be charming, funny Will Smith again. Now, you know, lately he's been doing concussion movies and down on his luck movies. And
right.
I mean, the best movie he's done in the last 10 years was the Suicide Squad, and that was quantifiably a terrible movie.
That was horrible.
But he's the only good thing good in that. I've always wondered.
No, he's not the only thing good. I like the kid who, or if he, I don't know if he's a kid.
No, I'm saying Suicide Squad.
Oh, in Suicide Squad, yes. But in Aladdin, I think that guy's going to be a star.
Yeah, you're really into that Aladdin guy.
I like that guy. He's a good-looking guy. Maria, have you seen it? Oh, well, he's a good-looking guy.
Well, wait till you see him, because Lee can't shut up about how good-looking he is.
Well, he is. He's magnetic. He's got an intangible that, you know, a real star has, like a Chris Pratt or a
Let's not go crazy.
Pratt is on line with the guy's going to be a big star. Write it down.
He is. What's his name?
I don't know.
I can tell you. You did. It was weird. We talked about this on the phone, and you just gushed about how handsome this guy was.
Handsome.
I was like, what's going on
here? He was
here?
A handsome dude.
I could tell you thought so.
Yeah.
Special effects were good. Mm-hmm. It's funny. There was one thing that occurred to me in that live action movie was that a lot of the genie's jokes. And don't get me wrong, he's not playing Robin Williams. He's playing Will Smith
the same role. Guy Ritchie choice, by the way.
But a lot of the genie's lines are the same. Did you notice that?
Yeah.
Because I remembered a lot of those jokes, and it was really funny to me because what was that? 92.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah.
Some of those genie jokes. You know, Robin Williams had this affectation where he would like go into like this kind of faux homosexual character.
Oh yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And there were some jokes in the original Aladdin that might be a little bit, you know, might be a little bit mocking of homosexuals. And those jokes stayed in the live action movie.
Yeah, well, I don't know if they planned the defense of that or not, but I think it's more of a stage persona, Bob Fosse choreographer thing. Because I remember Robin Williams even saying Bob Fosse's name, I think. Fosse, Fosse, Fosse. You know, he would do
that. Oh, yeah. You're thinking of Birdcage.
Well, that too.
Yeah, he did that.
But I think he did it in Aladdin. I think he mentions either Bob Fosse or...
I wouldn't be surprised. He mentions so many things in Aladdin, as we've talked about before.
Yeah, that was the perfect vehicle.
It is.
For Robin Williams.
Yeah.
Because that's the only way you could catch up with him visually is to animate it.
There's probably never been an animated character more perfect for their voice counterpart than that Robin Williams genie character.
Ever,
because it could be anything. He could turn into anything. And they said when they did that, they just let him run, right?
Yeah.
And then they just animated to what he said, which is amazing.
Of course, I guess now with the effects we got, you could do it. Live action.
Which they did, kind of.
Yeah, with Will Smith. And he did a good job. I liked Will Smith. He was really good in this.
Yeah, he really was. Yeah. I thought they added a song in for Jasmine.
Yeah, I didn't care for that.
I didn't think they needed
it. I'm not going to mention this on this podcast, but I told you, we were thinking about Will Smith, his character Hancock. And my favorite scene is at the end of the movie with Mike Epps when he lands and he doesn't say Hancock. He turns around and says, Han, something else.
Yeah.
But it reminded me, Mike Epps was at Comedy Off Broadway, and you know I was just hanging out.
Recently, right?
Yeah, this has been 3 or 4 years ago, and I'm hanging out in the lobby with our mutual friend Scott Wilson and our other mutual friend Tim Young, who works at the station. And those guys together are easily above 6'6", but they're older.
Yeah.
Mike Epps comes out of the green room getting ready to walk on the stage. So we're in the lobby, and I'm standing next to Scott and Tim, you know. And he kind of does a double take and looks at Scott and Tim, and he says, what is this, an ABA reunion? what is this, an old ABA reunion? And he walked right into the stage.
That was just his line.
Just it. He
just effortless?
Yeah, yeah, just effortless.
You got to love a joke like that.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it comes to me, I say it, I'm out.
Yeah, he walked
just
out.
Walk through, make a joke, Mike Epps wouldn't come on Hey Kentucky, so I got a little beef with him.
Oh, yeah.
I tried to get him on, but he didn't want any part of that. Mm. So I'm tainted on Mike Epps, just so you know.
He doesn't need to do media.
You don't think so? I disagree. I think he does need to do
media. Well, he doesn't think he does.
No, he doesn't think he needs to do
because
media.
Because he sells out, so why does he need to do it?
Well, Leela, you know, I mentioned this to you last night. What are some movies that make you think
of
summer is here? Like,
well,
what are some movies that like you equate with that summer feeling?
Right.
You know, good time, you know, feel good summer movies.
Breaking Away.
You are so old. That's a great reference for the three people in our audience who are like, is that Dennis Quaid?
Uh-huh.
Young Dennis Quaid?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, look how old Dennis Quaid is now.
Yeah.
He's 90.
He's not 90. He looks
old.
Good, actually. You've seen him do those
Does he look as good as the guy who played Aladdin?
No, it's Esurance commercials.
He doesn't do Esurance commercials.
He does something like that.
No, he doesn't.
Yes, he is. He's walking around in the no tie, and he's, I think it's something like that. It's one of those companies. I don't even know what they're, yes, it is.
He's not doing
commercials.
Look
it up.
You're crazy. He was in a movie just recently called The Intruder, where he played an old man.
Oh, yes.
Who keeps coming back and terrorizing the couple that buys his house.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know.
Which, that's a redo.
Of a million movies.
Right.
Yeah.
The one I'm thinking of, though, is Ray Liotta, maybe?
Oh, that's Unlawful Entry.
And
Michael Keaton's Pacific Heights.
No,
that's what I was thinking.
Not that one.
But that's a similar movie, too, where you play the creepy landlord.
True. But Ray Liotta and Kurt Russell.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I remember this.
What's Kurt Russell's handsomeness level? You want to weigh in on that?
He's a good looking
guy. Is he still looking pretty handsome?
Well, I don't know about now.
All right.
But he is the homeowner, and Ray Liotta is this cop who befriends them and then just starts hanging around way too much.
Yeah.
It ends up he's terrorizing, destroying Kurt Russell's life. And
is he in love with his wife or something? No.
Yeah, he
is
ends
that
up
what it
being
is?
In love with Kurt Russell's wife and tries to put the moves on her. And that's the climactic scene. And then there's this fight. Now, here's when I realized I guess I was different than people. Because I'm in a crowded theater watching this. And it's very intense. And the girl I was dating at the time's gripping the seat. And Kurt Russell hits Ray Liotta with a frying pan. And it went ding! And I laughed so hard. The only laugh in the entire theater.
Just because of the sound
and
effect?
She got so mad at me. was just appalled that I would laugh at.
Why?
That. I don't know.
She just thought this is violent. It's not funny. What kind of monster are you?
Right. But I couldn't help but think of Roadrunner and Wile E. Coyote. I went, clang.
This is why you should only take dates to see Stop or My Mom Will Shoot, as we've well established on this program.
Right.
Yeah. So moving on from handsome Dennis Quaid, what are some movies that make you think of the summertime?
You know, it's odd because I think that maybe it's more fall, but my first instinct was Doc Hollywood.
Oh.
I saw that in the summer. I remember.
That's a great movie.
Julie, what's her face in the lake? I remember that.
Julie Warner. What happened to her?
I don't know.
She was in that movie and she was in Tommy Boy, and then she was in Mr. Saturday Night.
I loved her in Mr. Saturday
Night. That's a good movie.
Polka
too.
Dot Dress, Table 8.
Yeah, she's really good in that too. But then she disappeared. I don't know what she does now.
Yeah, I think she's on something.
I don't know. Well, hope so.
I think
so.
She's still working.
It'd be awful if she's not doing anything.
By the way, did you see the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame?
The actual edifice or?
No. The show, the induction ceremony.
No. When was it on?
It's on HBO. It's so good, right? I mean, I love that every year. Tom Hanks produces that, by the way.
Yeah.
Who
was in this year? Was it Shaka Khan?
No. It was Janet Jackson.
The Cars?
No.
Radiohead.
Radiohead was in.
They didn't come and do it. Were they all there?
No, they weren't all there. They didn't perform. Stevie Nicks. Then Roxy.
Roxy Music.
I liked Roxy Music, you know.
The Cure.
The Cure.
By the way, did you see that great clip it made the rounds on Twitter of that excitable British journalist talking to Robert Smith?
No.
And she comes up to him. You know, Robert Smith is just famously dour.
Yeah.
He's like king of the goths.
Well, maybe I did see that.
And now he's old, and he looks like a character from What We Do in the Shadows. Right. Now he still looks the same, only he's
lipstick,
like 60-something.
He's 60, lipstick,
it's really
and
weird.
Very pale.
And this effusive journalist is up there like, aren't you so excited to be inducted in the Hall of Fame? And this is such an exciting day. And he just looks there very deadpan, goes, not as excited as you, apparently.
Right.
Yeah, it's great.
The Zombies, they made it in finally. And then the Def Leppard.
Awesome. Do you think Def Leppard deserved to be in?
Yeah, absolutely. How could you even suggest that?
I don't know. I think there are still other bands out there that should have gotten in before Def Leppard.
Def Leppard.
You're looking at me right now with such a look. Like, you look like I just said.
This is insane talk.
It's not insane talk.
Def Leppard was one of the biggest bands. In the late 80s.
A four-year period.
Who else sells out arenas and stadiums the way those guys did?
In a four-year period.
Yeah.
That's it.
No, it's not.
That's my point.
They still do it.
No, they still do it. You know who goes to those things now? Bunch of...
Old people?
A bunch of 50-year-olds wearing cowboy, like, fashionable, I'm going to the lake cowboy hats and drinking, you know, margaritas and wooing, you know.
You're such an elitist.
What? Would you go see Def Leppard now?
If somebody gave me a ticket.
There you go.
I wouldn't.
There you go.
I
There's your pay. Hall of Famers. They just said, I'll only go if somebody gives me a free ticket.
I'm not going to pay to go see anybody,
though.
They're
one of the greatest bands in history.
I'm not going to pay to see anybody.
Who would you pay to see now?
No, I wouldn't.
I would pay to see The Cure.
I would pay to see Anthony Jeselnik.
Okay, he's not a musician.
I don't care. I would pay to see him. You know, a couple other comics that we love, but I wouldn't pay to see a band. I just wouldn't. I'd go if you gave me a ticket. I might go.
You wouldn't pay to see a band.
No.
And you're here telling me who should be in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame,
yes,
and who shouldn't, and
correct.
You wouldn't even buy a monetary value ticket for a concert.
Yes, absolutely.
But yet you're qualified to tell me who
More
should
than you
be
are.
Who should be in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
How long were you a DJ?
That's a good point. You were a DJ. You do know your stuff.
Yeah. But anyway.
But, you know, I would like to point out that this is almost our one-year anniversary of you never having heard of the yacht rock genre.
Still haven't.
That's crazy. Yacht rock's the best. I've already started up this summer. I'm yacht rocking it up.
Is that a lot of Buffett?
No, it's not Buffett at all.
Okay.
It's like... Ambrosia.
Oh, I like Ambrosia.
A lot of Ambrosia.
I like
your
Ambrosia.
Baker Street. Guy,
I love Baker
Street. Jerry Rafferty.
Yeah, I love that.
It's a lot of you. I heard Deacon Blue.
Oh, yeah, Steely Dan.
Yeah. Who else is on there a lot?
Well, I like
Doobie
all these
Brothers.
Yeah, I like the Doobie Brothers. I like the
streets.
Well, okay, so I like Yacht Rock.
You don't know me, but yeah. I'm your father. That's a good, I love Michael McDonald's voice. Yeah.
Anyway, back to my. So anyway, one of the presenters, I forgot, maybe it's for the zombies, was Susanna Hoffs.
Oh my goodness. So she is one of.
I've had a crush
on her. Oh, me
too. Forever.
She's one of young Chris Tomlin's first crushes.
I'm telling you, she walked out there and my jaw hit the floor. She's 60, okay? I swear.
She's not 60.
I swear to God, she looks like she's 32. I've never seen anybody that so well preserved.
I love her. I haven't
looking
heard that name
that good.
In so long.
You need to look at Susanna Hoffs. What is her secret?
You know who she's married to?
Oh.
Jay Roach.
Oh, really?
The director who made Austin Powers
and
everything like that.
Oh, that's why she was in all
that.
Yeah,
she's in all that stuff. Yeah. I love Susanna Hoffs. Remember her in the Walk Like an Egyptian video?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man. That makeup.
I love the bangle.
Yeah, they're great. But anyway, I was asking you about summer movies.
Yeah. Well, okay. What were your favorites?
I have a list. Do you have a list?
Nah, I don't need a list.
Yeah, whatever. You've got time. You could have put a list together. I was thinking Vacation.
Vacation's a good one. Yeah, I agree with that.
I got Jaws.
Yeah.
Is a good summer movie.
Right.
Great Outdoors. Remember that movie with Candy and Aykroyd?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
One Crazy Summer, which was Cusack and Demi Moore. I think it's like 86.
Yeah. Okay. Now
ends with the big regatta. Now you're off. Weekend at Bernie's. That's a fun summer movie. I bet that's fun to watch still.
Yeah, I don't know. Can you even make that movie now? Or we?
Sure, you can. People die all the time.
There's not going to be some sort of outrage at the guy. You're dragging a dead guy around?
Well, no, he's dead.
Yeah, you don't think that's disrespectful?
That joke is still a perennial joke of
you
the dead
what,
person
I,
we're
I
pretending
did,
like is alive.
I did watch the other day the British version of Death at a Funeral.
I started watching that recently myself. I didn't get all the way through it.
It's actually pretty good.
Yeah.
You know, Chris Rock did an American version of it.
Which one's Dinklage in?
He's in both.
Is he?
Yeah,
okay.
He's in both of them, actually. And he's very funny in both.
You know, my favorite summer movie, and it's a movie I talk about a lot on this show, and I don't know if it is Wet Hot American Summer.
Yeah.
I think Wet Hot American Summer is one of the most underrated comedies of all time. I love it. So I watch it. I probably watch it twice a year, and every time I watch it, I'm just like, this is great. It's like watching Fargo. You know how you watch Fargo, and you're like, I forgot how good Fargo was until I watch it again.
Right.
And then you watch it. It's great. Wet Hot American Summer is like that for me. I will tell you, Lee, I have pulled up.
What about Summer Rental? John Candy.
John Candy?
Him walking through
Who
the sand.
Who plays his wife in that movie? That's a famous person, right?
Yeah, I can't remember. But that's
if
a
only
great
we had
scene.
If only you had something on the table in front of you that could tell us who played his wife in that movie.
Okay, all right, I'll do it.
Fire up the Google machine.
More interested in showing you Susanna Hoff, but okay. Where is it? Summer Rental.
That's John Candy where they just go rent a beach house, right?
Yeah.
What about Captain Ron? You remember that movie?
That's
it, your boy Kurt Russell and Martin Short. Marty Short.
It was Rip Torn was in Summer Rental. I love Rip Torn. And Richard Crenna.
Rip Torn has been in a lot of comedies. He's in Airplane.
Yeah. Her name is Karen Austin.
I don't know who that is.
She looks kind of familiar. Let's see what she's been in.
Let me see her face. You got a picture of her?
Yeah.
Nope, never seen her.
Okay, well, that was...
Well, that was anticlimactic.
Yeah.
Well, let me tell you this. I have a list here of the actual highest grossing summer movies of all time, parentheses, adjusted for inflation.
Yeah, well, this is important to me because, again, I think...
I know this is why I did it because I knew you would have an argument with this.
Yeah,
because
I foresaw
this coming down the pike.
We should always rank films and popularity by tickets sold.
Correct.
Not the price because of inflation, as we know.
Right.
So that's how you judge the popularity of a movie, butts in the seats.
Right. If you look at the list, if you just punch up highest grossing movies, it's like... I was just telling you,
the latest movie is.
It's just a list of Marvel movies.
Well, yeah.
It's, you know.
Because it's a $15, $16 ticket compared to a $2 ticket.
Well, let's go down this list. We'll do the top 10.
Okay.
Number 10 is Jurassic World.
All right.
Yeah.
Jurassic World.
Yeah.
Okay. That's the one with Chris Pratt.
That's the one with the giant shark in it.
Yeah.
Yeah, Chris Pratt's first one.
Okay.
It's not bad.
It's okay. I did like that they put Jimmy Buffett in it.
Jimmy Buffett's in that movie?
Yes. He's a cameo.
Who is he in
that? He's at Margaritaville, and he gets eaten.
I didn't know that.
Because they wanted to.
That's funny.
They wanted to be able to use Margaritaville.
Because they wanted it to look like a theme park.
Yeah. So they called him, and he said, I'll let you use it, but I got to be in it. And they said, okay, can we kill you? And he said, sure. So he's running, holding a margarita.
I didn't know that.
He like grabbed it, and there's this, what are they called? The flying
knife. The pterodactyls.
Pterodactyl gets him.
Oh, that's really funny. I did not know that.
And he's running in his shorts and boat shoes carrying a margarita.
That's awesome. Is he supposed to be Jimmy Buffett or just
a dude? Just a dude. Yeah. Just a dude.
Number 9 is Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Yeah, there you go.
It adjusted for inflation, $782 million.
Wow.
Its unadjusted gross was $248.
Yeah.
That shows you what inflation does.
Right,
Raiders, man. Raiders.
One of the best movies of all time.
Oh, man. Yeah.
It's easy. Forget about it. Top 5, top 3.
It's amazing. Still amazing.
Yeah.
Number 8, any guesses? This movie, unadjusted gross was $422 million. Adjusted gross for inflation, $788 million. It was in 1994, and it's an animated picture.
It was in 19 what?
94.
94. Lion King.
And Lion King is it. Yeah. We're getting ready to get a new live-action one of those.
Yeah.
Number 7 was a movie that made $474 million unadjusted, $798 million adjusted.
Wow.
1999. And I'll say this, it was a big return for a major film franchise.
Okay, let's do Phantom Menace.
Correct. Yeah. Phantom Menace it is. Did you like that movie?
No. I was excited, though, because I just wanted to visit my Star Wars place again. You know, I thought this would be good. So I think I was telling people I liked it when actually I thought, this isn't that good.
No.
But I was too afraid to say that because, it was Star Wars.
You thought you'd lose your nerd card.
It wasn't. I was afraid of that. I didn't want to betray myself,
yeah.
That's
how
I
felt about
fan.
The fourth Indiana Jones movie. Like, I was like, I don't want to admit that it wasn't good.
It wasn't good.
Number 6, unadjusted gross, $402 million. Adjusted gross, $812 million. This is a movie that we've already sort of mentioned on this list.
Okay.
1993.
Jurassic Park.
Now, I remember seeing Jurassic Park in the theater for the first time and thinking, this is the most amazing thing.
Yeah,
ever.
Seeing those
Brachiosaurus. They look totally real. And they still do. Like, I watched the T-Rex scene recently. Mm-hmm. It holds up.
Yeah.
It doesn't look fake at all.
Yeah.
It looks as good as the T-Rex does now.
I remember seeing some documentary about how Spielberg had to really take a leap of faith because it was all going to be done with miniatures.
Oh, wow. Like Ray Harryhausen, like the Sinbad movies?
Yeah.
Sort of?
Yeah. Or like Star Wars, when Luke fights that thing in Return of the Jedi.
The Rancor monster.
It was going to be done like that.
Huh.
And these computer guys, whether they were from Pixar, wherever they were from.
Was it Industrial Light and Magic?
I don't know if it was those guys yet, but they convinced him, we can do this.
Well,
and he said, okay. And they had no idea if it would work. So they shot all those scenes, throwing up blue screens and green screens everywhere, and hoping to God this works. Can you imagine the pressure, though, of thinking, what if we get back and this doesn't work at all? And I have spent, $100 million.
And this is the biggest dog in Hollywood history.
Yeah.
It holds up, though, man. I'm telling you. Number 5 is movie 1983. I don't even need to tell you what that is.
Return of the Jedi.
Correct. That made $309 million unadjusted, $831 million adjusted.
Yeah.
I like Jedi.
I do too, but we both know the Ewoks were sort of silly.
Yeah, but young me thought they were great.
Young me too.
I like Jabba the Hutt too.
Oh, yeah.
Like those two set pieces are great.
Right.
Number 4, not surprisingly, is another Star Wars movie.
Empire.
That's $867 million adjusted. $290 million unadjusted. That's crazy. Number 3 is a movie we've already referenced here. It's a Cape movie. Takes place in Cape Cod.
Cape Cod?
Yep.
Jaws?
Yeah, Jaws. $1.1 billion.
Wow.
Is its adjusted
for
inflation.
There's your blockbuster. That was the original blockbuster.
Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah. I would say that, yeah. Number 2 is going to surprise you. It was a 1980. I'm not even going to tell you.
Okay. Steel yet. Magnolias.
No. It's a four. It made $435 million unadjusted, $1.2 billion adjusted, 1982.
And this is going to surprise me?
I don't think it's going to come directly to your head. It should, since I said 1982.
Oh, I know what it is. E.T.
E.T., correct. Yeah, right, yeah. Right, yeah. That movie, I remember having a lot of life. Like, I think I might have asked my parents to take me to see that multiple times in the theater. Mm-hmm. I think we even saw it at the drive-in.
Yeah.
It was really good at the time.
Yeah, it was great.
What a tearjerker.
Yeah.
I don't think I've watched it in years, though. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it holds up or not. And number one should not surprise you, since we've already mentioned almost every film in this franchise.
It's got to be Star Wars.
It is Star Wars, A New Hope, 1977, $1.5 billion.
Yeah. So it's still whipping all the Marvel movies and as far as butts in seats.
Yeah.
Yeah. So is that just for summer movies, or is that?
That is movies that were released in the summer. Okay. Yes. Right. Yeah. Obviously, that's not. I think Gone with the Wind is the top of that list if you go all-time movies.
I think you are right. Yeah.
But yeah, so what else we got coming out this summer that you want to see?
Well, Lion King. I'll see Lion King. Yeah, I'll see Toy Story.
Oh, Toy Story will be a big
hit. There's a movie, I saw the trailer. I think it was Anton Fuqua that did it, maybe? Or
Anton Fuqua just did the Muhammad Ali documentary.
So maybe it's not him. Maybe really it's Coogler. I can't remember. One of those guys. But it's 21st something, 21 Street or... Maybe it's not 21 Jump Street. But, you know, it's something like, what is the name of that movie? It looks really good.
What's it about?
It's a kid whose dad's a cop. He gets killed. And then he becomes a cop later in life. And then there's another cop killer out there. But everything is not what it seems.
Ooh, color me intrigued. I don't know what it is.
I've never even heard of this movie. I'm going to look it up. Because you got to see what's
I can see Coogler doing a good job of something like that.
Oh, yeah. No, because I remember it going, oh, my goodness. This looks fantastic.
Yeah, I don't know. Toy Story will be the...
No, it'll kill it.
Endgame is technically not a summer movie. So
right.
Toy Story will be the big winner of the summer. It has to be. Because everybody goes to see
family
that. Adults.
Friendly.
Kids, yeah. Everybody, multiple
Absolutely.
Times. It'll be huge.
Yeah. And then, of course, later in the year, we got the final installment of Star Wars coming out.
Is that this year?
Yeah.
Oh,
like
nice.
In December. Think about what Disney's doing.
What aren't they doing?
But they'll never have a bigger year than they're going to have this year as a company.
They release the streaming service.
Right.
The new Star Wars theme park.
Right.
On both coasts.
Right. New hotel coming online.
Yeah.
But also...
Avengers.
Captain Marvel first.
Captain Marvel, Toy Story, Lion King, Aladdin.
Right.
And we're already up to just the first half of the year.
That's what I'm saying.
You know they're going to have a big Christmas release, and we don't even really know what it is yet.
How good for
them.
Yeah.
They need that kind of money. They need that money.
They do. God bless them.
Yeah. I'm glad to see them back on their feet.
You got a lot of things you got to pay for. Well, I can't find this movie. I was hoping I'd tell you all about it. When I do, though, you're going to... 21 Bridges. Found it.
Yeah, okay, never heard of it.
It looks really good.
That's a better title than 21 Street.
Yes, it is. Well, I knew it was 21 something, but I'm trying to see.
Yeah, I'm going to check that trailer out ASAP because that sounds fun.
Yeah,
not fun, but good.
I'm actually watching the trailer. I didn't mean to right there. I was hoping to.
Well, we're doing a podcast.
Oh, okay.
You should do that on your own time.
All right. Thank you.
But yeah, Lee, so what time we got? How long have we been doing this, Maria?
For hours.
Maria, by the way, great to see you again as well. I haven't seen you also. Okay. All right. Well, let's wrap this one up. And next week will be our big
60th.
Extravaganza. We will be almost Dennis Quaid years old, probably. Maybe younger.
You're going to see Dennis Quaid in an insurance commercial, and you're going to call me and apologize.
You're thinking of the commercial with that guy in the emu.
No, I'm not.
He's not in an insurance
commercial.
As a
matter of fact, it's some kind of commercial, and he makes fun of being in the commercial. He breaks the fourth wall the whole time.
Gosh, that sounds hilarious.
You're going to owe me an apology.
I'm not. I will not deliver it.
You're going to.
Nope. No chance. All right. Thank you guys so much. We are so glad to be back with you this week. I appreciate you listening. Hope you'll join us for number 60. This has been the Funkhauser Situation. Lee, say goodbye to everybody.
Goodbye, everybody.
All right. We'll see you next week. Have a good one, folks. Enjoy the hot summer on your neck. Goodbye.